Can you hear me? Yeah. So I would like to start by thanking the organizers for giving this opportunity and also for introducing many of the topics I will talk about in my talk. Actually, I could almost skip the introduction because, you know, the basic literature of underlying my presentation has been so beautifully introduced already. But nothing works today. No, it's without battery. Okay. So I'll talk still about competition and the outcome of competition. And but basically, all these ideas are based on ideas dating back to Hutchinson, named before. And there is this central idea in ecology that the number of competitors that can coexist is related to the number of distinct resources or distinct limiting factors. Of course, you know, in nature we see a lot of exceptions to this rule. So there has been a lot of attempts theoretically to find a way out to this bound. Well, the way attempts have been basically have been to include models explicitly space. So the fact that species can live in different locations in space. For the sea flows is very important, so the fact that plankton is transported by water currents. One can consider the fact that in real ecosystem you don't have only competition, but you have different tropic levels, and you can have a complex food webs. Or also neutral theory may be seen as one of the possibilities to solve this problem. But in this talk I will focus on one specific problem, that is what happens if you have food of different sizes, so you can't talk about a discrete number of limiting factor, but you have it's more appropriate to consider a continuous spectrum of resources. I will stick pretty much in the Lotka-Volterra world, so my species will be this is the simple example of competition among two species, so the species by themselves will grow logistically, and then there is an interaction term which couples them together.
Oh, that's this? Yeah, okay.
So they interact, and if you think that they have roughly a similar growth rate, the result of the simple Lotka-Volterra model is that they will coexist if competition between species is less strong than competition, interspecific competition, so competition among individuals belonging to the same species. So essentially, these species have to interact not too much. They don't have to compete too strongly in order to live well together. So one would like to generalize this kind of ideas to many species, but it's easy to realize that this doesn't bring very far, because essentially you have to specify, if you have S species, you have to specify S square parameters, which tells you how much one species compete with another species. And this clearly is too much and doesn't bring too much understanding to this problem. So what typically is done in these models is to consider a trait. I mean, species are organized according to a trait, which is supposed to be the most important trait determining competition. And the underlying idea is that, trait can be body mass, but can also be, for example, big size, as we've seen in the first talk this morning. And the idea is that essentially species compete much more with other species having a similar trait and much less with the species having a bit different trait. One can quantify better this idea by specifying utilization function. So you think that you have this axis, you have, for example, food of different size and species feeding on these resources also with a different preference. And there are some functions which characterize what's the spectrum of resources a species can consume. And the idea is that competition will be somehow proportional. If you have two species which have these two utilization functions, competition will be somehow proportional to the overlap of these two utilization functions. And the central hypothesis, which has been very little questioned in the literature, is that usually, if we don't know much about competition function, we assume that everything is Gaussian. So we think that these curves are Gaussian, and you can see that in this case, also the overlap is a Gaussian function of the distance between their peaks. So this leads essentially the model, to the best of my knowledge, has been introduced for the first time by MacArthur and Wilson in 1966, 67. And essentially, it's the local Terra model, but you assume that the to each species is attached one label, which is their trait, and perhaps the growth rate can be, you know, depends on this trait, and also the competition is a decreasing function of this trait. And of course, if you want to simulate this model, one can do a number of different things, depending if you are thinking about evolution or about, for example, a community assembly and so on. So, for example, you can start with a few species and try to invade it at some regular interval, or start with all species initially present in the ecosystem and see how the abundances of the species adjust due to competition. And of course, this kind of different protocols of simulating the model will bring to different results, because there are many possible solutions of this kind of equations. So the first question is whether this is really a model for limiting similarity. And here I show you a simulation of this model with an exponentially decaying competition function. So here I'm doing the community assembly protocol. So once in a while I'm adding a new species inside the system. And you can see that, you know, this competition, the width of the competition will be something like 0.1. So it will be something like this. And you can see that basically all invaders persist. So you can always invade no matter what's the density of competitors around you. Simply what happens is that, you know, you keep adding species, and due to competition, the population of everybody is slowly going down. Of course, it's stochastic, because the position of this species is random. But there's nothing that says here that there is a limiting similarity. So, of course, this has caused a problem, and somehow this is, you can see, think is the same problem as in the famous example by Rofgarden, where, you know, he considered a case in which this growth rate is Gaussian and the competition function is Gaussian. And here, maybe it's even simpler, because I'm showing you that if you take a constant growth rate and an exponentially decaying competition, you always end up in the same problem, that there is no limiting similarity. But I could also have taken a Gaussian function here and would get still the same problem. There are lots of examples of this kind of situation. So one can ask, why is this? Why we get this thing? We don't get discrete species with, you know, a well-defined difference among them. And the reason is that in this kind of formulation of the model, if the two species have a very similar trait, they are basically the same species, because there is nothing distinguishing them. So essentially, you are increasing the competition, but you are also removing any difference. So there's no reason why one of the two species should outcompete the other. So there are several ways to, you know, solve this pathology of the problem. You know, Geza showed mathematically that this kind of behavior is structurally unstable. But one thing one can do to solve it more in a numerical fashion is to think that, okay, maybe there are also other traits. So we have this competition function, but now the growth rate depends on the species and it's random. So when a new invader comes into the system, he gets a growth rate which is 1 on average, but there are some 40% variation in this growth rate. So if you do that, you find a very different phenomenon. You see that now, if you get two close peaks, there is some kind of exclusion. If you compare it here with this case where no heterogeneity is present, in most cases where you find two very close competitors, one outcompetes the other. I must say, then you have an average distance in this niche space which is of the order of this competition distance. But this is not always the case, because since this growth rate now is random, because it depends on many other traits, for example, you can have in many case situation in which by chance you extract two growth rates which are very similar. So for example, see in this case, these two coexist on a very large number. This is in the time is measured in generations. So you can have situation in which simply by stochasticity you get two numbers which are very close to each other. And eventually one of these two probably will go extinct, because the growth rate is not the same. But this the spacing in niche space is random, because it's depending on the randomness which is introduced in the model. So I don't know if this is a case for niche neutral coexistence, because one can think that these two are almost neutral species, even if they are different because their traits are chosen randomly. So this is, you know, there are several ways to solve this problem, but what I would like to show you is that different ways of breaking limiting similarity lead to different patterns. So there was this quite influential paper in 2005 by Schaeffer and Van Ness, in which they considered the same model with a Gaussian competition function. And what they find is that the initial state, where now the species are equal competitors, so the growth rate is the same for everybody, there is this, you know, in very long time, like after several hundred generations, you get the formation of this very regular pattern, which has nothing to do with the stochastic pattern I showed you before. So here, the spacing is really regular. I mean, the spacing between this peak and this peak is the same as the spacing between this peak and this peak. And it's essentially determined by the competition length. So, you know, different ways, I mean, the message I have here is that different ways of breaking the limited similarities lead to different patterns. You know, if you wait for a long time, well, depend on exactly the function you implement. This model, if you wait thousands and thousands of generations, in the end you will find just four species. I mean, this is periodic. It's just the system is made on a ring to avoid the effect of the boundaries. So these are transient. I mean, it just slowly, slowly, these peaks will shrink, and then result into delta function. You can also modify this this competition function in order to have these clumps to be stable. So the claim in this paper was that this kind of instability could be a mechanism to explain the fact that, you know, empirically, you know, if you see the spectrum of species as a function of the body mass, you don't see very regular function, but often you find peaks and, you know, like more irregular distributions. So we try to understand what was the cause of this instability, and you know, it's sort of similar to the article Professor Dickman was discussing in his talk. So if you consider the homogeneous state, I mean this coexistence solution, you can ask whether this solution is stable, and the result you get is that the stability depends on the sign of the Fourier transform of the competition function. If this Fourier transform is always positive, then you have a stable uniform solution. Otherwise, you will end up with these patterns. So the question is, you know, we have this condition, but it's, you know, quite it's hard to visualize what does it mean. So which competition function have a positive defined Fourier transform, and which don't? So, for example, one thing one can do is to consider a family of competition functions which are exponential of the distance in this space to some power. So with the sigma equal 1, we have this exponentially decaying competition function. Sigma equal 2 will be Gaussian, and then it's more and more nonlinear. And one can show that the family of competition functions which lead to stable patterns are with sigma less or equal than 2. So here you have the exponential, which has this stable coexistence solution. And if you take, for example, the extreme case of sigma equal 4, you get this pattern, which develops in a much faster time than the pattern in the Gaussian case. So this one is really unstable, and in like 40, 50 generations, you get this this formation of these sharp peaks. So it's quite interesting that, you know, you have this radically different behavior, just changing a little bit the nonlinearity in this function. And the Gaussian case, which is always used in the literature, is exactly on this line. It's on the middle between these two behaviors. So we were curious about what's, you know, the mathematical analysis would say that the Gaussian case is on this line, but it's stable. So if you take a Gaussian distribution, you shouldn't see this pattern. So we try to understand what happened in the Schaeffer and Van Ness paper, I mean, why they observed this pattern in the Gaussian case. And the reason why they get this pattern is a bit technical. So if you consider this kind of system on a ring, it's like considering that the system has infinite copy of itself. So it's like taking many replicas of the system, and it's like, you know, the system is periodic and is infinite. So if you want to consider how these pieces interact with these pieces, I have to consider not only this interaction, but also the interaction with this copy here, and this copy here, and this copy here, and so on. Or I can do like the numerically simple scheme, or just considering the shortest path. So this only interacts with this, and this only interacts with this, for example, because I'm on a ring. If I do this truncation, you end up with this pattern. And if I don't do it, I don't get pattern. So it's quite interesting that since it's such a limiting case, it's sensitive to very, very small variation in the implementation, because, of course, if you consider how much this piece could interact with this copy here, it will be very small because the Gaussian function will decay a lot. But this small difference is enough to change from this behavior to this behavior. We try to see, I mean, if there was also some possible ecological mechanism that could correspond, you know, could create this pattern in the Gaussian case without just resorting to, you know, numerical truncation and just numerical differences in the numerical implementation. And what we did is to consider a sort of a simple evolutionary mechanism coupled to this model. So here there is no truncation, but a species whose population goes below some threshold go extinct and are removed from the system. And then a new species is put in the system at random, but not completely at random. So it's placed close to an existing one. It's like, you know, it emerges for some kind of speciation mechanism, and it's not too different from the, you know, parent species. This kind of mechanism, even if a species is introduced very rarely, like once every 100 generation or 200 generation, is enough to move from the from the regular state to the pattern. While, you know, introducing this kind of mechanism has no influence if you take one of these distribution which is stable, like in the exponential case. So I have a take-home message here. Is, you know, Gaussian case, which, you know, usually in biological science, the Gaussian assumption looks, very innocent. Like if you take the statistics of the height of the people in this room is Gaussian. So it's like, it looks like it's very sensible to say that things are Gaussian in nature. But in this case, it's a very special assumption. You know, one can see the positive side of it, that, you know, we are considering a very rich case in which, you know, I add some ingredients to the model and I see a lot of interesting things happening. But there is also a bad side that, you know, what I think in a simulation can be not representative of a general case, because I'm sitting on a very special distribution. And I would say that the bad side is kind of more important than the good side. So one, you know, if one is not sure what should be the outcome of the model, it would be better to take an exponential function, which is more safe and gives more robust results. There is another point here, which is whether these clumps should be biologically meaningful. And like the fact of considering a non-positive defined competition function has been already considered by Rolf Gardner in his book. And he showed, it's quite easy to show that if you consider, if the competition function is constructed as an overlap of two identical utilization functions, then you don't have clumps. So like this, a function which is constructed like this is always positive defined, no matter what the use are. On the other hand, one can consider more general situation. For example, the utilization function might depend on the body size. So like species with large body size can have a different shape of the utilization function. So this doesn't depend only on the difference between A and B, but also on the actual values of their trait. And in this case, of course, this result is not any more valid, and you can have whatever, you can have a positive defined kernels, negative defined kernels, also non-symmetric kernels, which could lead to drifting solutions, and so on. I'm almost finished. I just want to mention what happened to in this model if you include a growth rate which depends on the trait. What we were able to show is that if there is a coexistent solution, so a positive solution which is different from zero everywhere, then its stability still depends on this competition function having negative mode. So even if in the non-homogeneous case you can see that you can have the clumps, and they depend exactly on the same property of the competition function. There are also, of course, another case which case I showed before, that you know there are one possibility would be to destabilize this this solution by choosing a proper competition function, and the other is to take a growth rate such that this coexistence solution doesn't exist at all or is negative. So, like in this case, in which you have a box distribution, I'll just show you if I manage, but I don't think I will. Maybe it works. I have a small applet. This is the address if you want, if you like video games, if you want to play with it. It's like a simulation of the model for a Gaussian carrying capacity. So in this case, the blue curve is the growth rate, and it's a Gaussian function. This is the distribution of species. Of course, there is some truncation. It's just an histogram, and it's a very simple implementation. And I can change live the parameter. So if I reduce competition and the computer doesn't abandon me, I should see that all species grow together. So it's like, you know, just rescaling all the population. And I can see what happens. So in the exponential case, this single peak solution is fairly robust. Like if, for example, I try to change, expand this niche width, you see this wave, because now, of course, the environment has changed, and there is this front which is propagating. But after a while, if my computer doesn't block, you should see that you still have this modulated solution, which is a unimodal. It's going to take a while, I think. Computer is dead. Yeah, it's going there. Of course, if again, also in this case, if I accept the fact that I can have a very nonlinear competition function, which is not constructed from a utilization function, so I can just change the sigma, which controls the nonlinearity of my competition, then you immediately get this different peaks inside the single peak of the growth rate. Yeah, I'll just conclude. Well, to the best of my understanding, I think you know this. It's true that these continuous coexistence solutions are unstable, but something which has not been stressed so much before is that the way of destroying continuous coexistence is not unique. There are several possibilities, and these possibilities lead to radically different patterns. So one is just, you know, to include something which leads to limited similarity. For example, this randomness in the species growth rate, or some additional trait which creates a distance in each space. And this creates some, you know, average distance, but not like a broad regular pattern. The second would be just destroy the coexistence solution by changing the carrying capacity, like in Geza's paper. And the third one, which is what I talked more about here, is to have a very nonlinear competition function which can create these clumps. So these three, I would say, are all the possibilities I know, and they just generate these different patterns that I showed you. So I conclude with some literature, and I have these applets online if you want to play a bit with these models. Are still a bit preliminary, and they don't really work with all browsers, but it's quite fun to change parameters and you know see what the dynamics is and what really happens in this model. And I thank you for your attention.
Thank you. We even have time for a question. So is the question?
It's a bit commended, but I would be interested in your opinion. It's about genericity. So in biology, we don't want to deal with non-generic or not structurally robust cases because they don't tell us anything about the real world, we believe. So therefore, it's quite important to be clear what is generic. And Geza argues, I think mathematically correctly, that, for example, these electroquoted kernels or the double exponential kernels, they're non-generic. But they seem quite natural. So I think one needs some reasoning why they're non-generic, and I want to try out my reasoning on you and hear your comment. And the reasoning would be that we would construct genericity in the Fourier space. So we can select the Fourier coefficient at any wavelength, and these kernels that create continuous distributions require that all selections are positive. Yeah? So we always have a 50-50 chance, so to speak, of selecting a positive or negative number, but each case, we always select the positive one. And since we have infinitely many cases, that means that we are moving to probability zero of creating a kernel that has all positive.
I agree completely with this comment. I can add something which I don't know if it's in the line of what you're saying. Something which is not clear to me is how smooth do we imagine this competition function and also these growth rates. I mean, of course, if they are convolution, that must be quite smooth. And also, I mean, if I eat a sandwich, then my ecology wouldn't change so much, even if my body size will increase by 100 grams or something. So it's if one considers like perturbations, also like very localized perturbation in the real space, in the trade space, then one is making a mess on the tail in Fourier space because, you know, it's creating a lot of high frequencies. So I appreciate the point of structural instabilities, but I don't know if it's the end of the stories because one should think also what kind of perturbation are reasonable. I mean, if one wants perturbation which will be sufficiently smooth, or if like localized sharp perturbations are also acceptable. So I don't know.
All right, thanks again. Thanks.